no sense.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. This is the Relic Radio Show. Thanks for joining me this Tuesday for another hour of radio drama. We'll hear first this week from Theatre Royal with their story from February 13th, 1954, titled Bartleby. After that, it's Mark Trail and the Rapids of No Return, his story from March 17th, 1950.
The National Broadcasting Company presents, transcribes, Sir Laurence Olivier in Theatre Royal.
This is Laurence Olivier. Once again, it is my pleasure to introduce to you another in this series of programs. And this week, my choice of subject is, for the first time, the work of an American author. And a mighty American author, too. Herman Melville. It's a favorite story, but unexpected, both in mood and setting. Almost impossible to associate with the author of Moby Dick. Written in a comedy vein, but a strange tenderness adheres to it. A haunting melancholy just under the surface of its light-hearted exterior. I hope it will interest you, as it does me. I'm to play the part of the Master in Chancery who tells the story. The setting is New York many years ago, and the title is Bartleby. By profession, I am a lawyer. By disposition, I'm a man who has always believed that the easiest way of life is the best. The result is that though I belong to a profession proverbially energetic and nervous, even to turbulence at times, yet nothing of that sort have I ever suffered to invade my peace. As lawyers go, you might even say that I was unambitious. I aspire to nothing more than a snug business among rich men's bonds and mortgages and title deeds.
With submission, sir, that business has won us quite a respectable reputation in Wall Street.
Quite so, Turkey. That was Turkey, one of my copying clerks. At least Turkey was his nickname, because of his bright red face. He's a very steady fellow, Turkey is, hard-working and reliable, at least in the morning. Oddly enough, as the day wears on, Turkey's face becomes redder and redder, and the afternoon is quite a bad time for him. He becomes downright careless.
With submission, sir, I consider myself your right-hand man. In the morning, I merely marshal and deploy my columns, but in the afternoon, I put myself at their head and gallantly charge the foe like this.
Turkey! You've upset the inkwell. And look at all those blots.
Oh, with submission, sir, I'm getting old. Surely, sir, you won't urge a blot or two against gray hair.
No, Turkey, but...
Old age, even if it blot the page, is honorable. With submission, sir, we're both getting old.
Yes, Turkey. I merely thought that perhaps you might like to work simply in the mornings and take the
With submission, sir, mornings and afternoons.
Yes, Turkey. You see the sort of trouble I have with Turkey in the afternoons. Even so, he's a very conscientious fellow, conscientious and hardworking. The same might be said of my other copyist, Nippers, as we call him.
Oh, hang this table. If it isn't too low, it's too high.
But Nippers, please, look. If you were to tilt it towards you with the book under the leg, like this, it would serve you perfectly.
I've tried it like that. It stops the circulation of my arms.
Oh, well, like this, then.
No, I've tried it like that, too. Makes my back ache, stooping over it. Hang the table. How can I possibly be expected to...
Well, you see the way that it was with Nippers. Irritable. Luckily, the cause of his irritability, indigestion, was worse in the morning than the afternoon, so that as Turkey began to go off, Nippers began to come on, which was all very convenient under the circumstances. Finally, there was our office boy, Ginger Nuts.
They call me that because I'm the one that goes and fetches them. Ginger Nuts, bags of them.
Yes, rather too many of them, I sometimes think. By the way, Turkey, you really must be more careful. licking a ginger nut and clapping it onto a mortgage for a seal, you know. Really.
Submission, sir. It was generous of me to find you in stationery on my own account.
That's as may be, Turkey, but even so...
He'd better be more careful now, sir, hadn't he? There's a new one waiting outside.
A new one? Oh, you mean in answer to our advertisement. Choyman, ginger nut, Choyman.
Yes, sir.
After all, since we've come into all this business as a master in chancery, you and Nippers can hardly be expected to keep pace with it, Turkey. We need additional help, eh? Ah, come in. You've come in answer to our advertisement, have you? Good. And this is a sample of your work, is it? Yes. Good. Very good. Very neat hand. Yes. And the salary, $12 a week, is satisfactory? Good. Very good. Well, then you can start with us immediately. Oh, and by the way, what is your name?
Bartleby.
Bartleby was quite an acquisition. At least he seemed so at first. As if long famishing for something to copy, he seemed to gorge himself on my documents. There was no pause for digestion. He ran a day and night line, copying by sunlight and by candlelight. I should have been quite delighted with his application had he been cheerful, but he sat there behind the screen in a corner of my office and he wrote away silently, palely, mechanically. Now then, let me see. Underwood versus Underwood. Bartleby, just check this over with me, will you, Bartleby?
I would prefer not to.
Bartleby, as I was saying, this will have to be read over. Just come and check it with me, will you?
I would prefer not to.
Prefer not to? What do you mean? Are you moonstruck? I want you to help me compare this sheet here. Take it.
I would prefer not to.
I looked at him in astonishment. His face was composed, his eye was calm. Not a ripple of agitation anywhere. If he had looked the least bit angry or impertinent, I should have dismissed him on the spot. As it was, I decided to forget the whole matter for the present. Nippers?
Yes, sir?
Just come and check this over with me, will you?
Right away, sir.
Unfortunately, that was only the first of many quite extraordinary scenes. A few days later, Bartleby concluded four lengthy copies of a testimony in a high court action. These also had to be checked for accuracy. I called out Turkey, Nippers, and Ginger Nut from the next office. And finally, Bartleby. Come along, Bartleby. We're waiting.
What is it?
The copies. The copies. We're going to check them. Here, take the fourth one.
I would prefer not to.
But why not?
I would prefer not to.
But these are your own copies we're going to check. It's going to save you time, you see, because one reading will check all four of them. It's common practice. Every copyist helps to check his copies, doesn't he?
I would prefer not to.
You are decided, then? You are not going to do as I ask? Even when it's common practice and common sense? Well, Turkey, what do you think of this? Aren't I right?
With submission, sir, I think that you are.
Nippers, what do you think of it?
I think I should kick him out of the office.
Ginger Nut, what do you think?
I think he's a little loony, sir.
Well, you hear what they say, Bartleby. You see, it's your duty. Well, I suppose we can just manage, the four of us, eh? Well, I'm afraid that scene was only one of many. We grew used to the fact that he would never check his copies, would never carry messages, in fact, must never be asked to do anything at all but copying. Otherwise, he was most diligent. He always was there when I arrived in the morning and still there when the last of us left at night. In fact, I gave him his own key to the office. Now, one Sunday morning, I had occasion to go back to my chambers for something I'd forgotten. That's queer. There seems to be a key in the lock already, on the inside. Goodness gracious, Bartleby, what are you doing here on a Sunday morning?
I'm sorry, but I'm busy.
Busy? But you're only half-dressed, man.
I'm sorry, I'm busy. You will have to come back later. If you walk around the block two or three times, I shall probably have finished.
Yes, of course, Bartleby. Can you believe it? I slunk away from my own door and did as I was told. two or three turns round the block. It was the mildness of the man which had disarmed me. In fact, more or less unmanned me. In any case, what on earth could he be doing in the office on Sunday morning, improperly dressed? I was determined to find out, so in due course, back to the office I went. Bartleby? Bartleby? Oh, he seems to have gone. What goes on behind that screen, I wonder? Wait a minute, what's this? A blanket? Goodness gracious, the man has actually been sleeping on the sofa. And soap, towel, blacking box, tin basin? Why, the man actually lives here. Lives in my office. Really? Keeping a bachelor's hall all by himself. Really? Oh, the poor man. How friendless. How lonely. A deserted office in an empty building in a deserted street. Home. Poor fellow. I will must ask him. Good morning, Turkey. Here we are. Hoggleford versus Hoggleford. In triplicate, please, Turkey.
Very good, sir.
Bartleby? Bartleby, come here. Now, I'm not going to ask you to do anything you would prefer not to. I simply wish to speak to you. Where were you born, Bartleby? Will you tell me?
I would prefer not to.
Well, will you tell me anything about yourself?
I would prefer not to.
But what reasonable objection can you have to me? I feel friendly towards you. Well.
But at present, I prefer to give no answer.
Prefer not, huh? I'd prefer him if I were you, sir. I'd give him his preferences, a stubborn mule.
Mr. Nippers, I'd prefer that you withdrew for the present.
Oh, all right.
You see, Bartleby, this is unreasonable.
With submission, sir, I was thinking if Bartleby here would simply prefer to take a quart of ale every day, it would do him much toward mending him.
So you've got the word too, Turkey.
With submission, what word, sir?
If you don't mind, I would prefer to be left alone.
And that's the word, Turkey. That's it.
Oh, prefer.
Yes.
Yes, it's a queer word. I never use it myself. But, sir, as I was saying, if he would prefer...
Turkey, would you leave us alone, please?
Oh, certainly, sir, if you prefer it, then.
Sure. Look, sir, would you prefer this copied on blue paper
or... Go away, Nippers. I don't prefer anything, ever.
Very well.
Obviously, the man was driving us all mad. There was only one thing to do about him. The man would have to be dismissed. I determined to have it out with him the very next day. Now, see here, Bartleby. I've been watching you all morning. You've done nothing but stand there and look out of the window at a blank wall all the morning. Now, you're not employed to stand there doing nothing, Bartleby. You're employed to sit there and get on with your copying.
I've decided not to do any more.
What's this? Do no more copying?
No more.
But why not? What's the reason?
Don't you see the reason for yourself?
Don't I? Oh, you mean your eyesight. Yes, the light is rather bad in that corner. Yes, you mean you've strained your eye? Yes. Well, perhaps for a few days it would be a good idea if you stopped and rested.
I've given up copying permanently.
Well, that was that. He stayed on a fixture. In fact, he became even more of a fixture than before, if that was possible. Now he would do absolutely nothing in the office. Absolutely nothing at all. Obviously, there was only one thing to be done, however sorry I might feel for him. After all, it was a business that I was running. And after a few weeks, I had simply no option left. Bartleby, I'm afraid I must give you 6 days' notice. 6 days, Bartleby, from today.
In a moment, we continue Theatre Royal with Sir Laurence Olivier.
Pipe and slippers are in order tomorrow, as all the Sunday stay-at-homers enjoy the finest in variety entertainment. For what finer musical offering could be had than an evening spent with Guido Cantelli and the NBC Symphony in another brilliant concert from Carnegie Hall? Tomorrow's performance features Tchaikovsky's Symphony No. 4 in F minor, plus a stirring Rossini overture. Add to the finest in music the latest developments in the arts and sciences, as presented by leaders in every cultural field on Collector's Item. And then there is your Sunday newspaper of the air, Weekend, the most effortless way to keep abreast of the times, with everything from cover story right down to feature page, and spotlighting such famous byliners as Merrill Muller, Earl Godwin, Tex McCrary, and Elmo Roper. Cap culture with comedy as you join the ever-delightful Marriotts, played by Hume Cronin and Jessica Tandy, when they decide it is time to economize, but end up in financial straits anyhow, on the warmly human series, The Marriage. And then for gripping drama, listen and learn as you experience the horrors of an alcoholic on his lost weekend. Glenn Ford plays the lead in this award-winning tale heard on tomorrow's NBC Star Playhouse. So go ahead this once, be lazy and like it. Spend a top-notch Sunday at home with the best in entertainment, courtesy NBC.
And now we continue Theater Royal with Sir Laurence Olivier.
Yes, decently as I could, I told Bartleby that in 6 days' time he must unconditionally leave my office. I warned him to take measures in the interval for procuring some other abode. I even offered to assist him in the task if he himself would take the first step. And, of course, I told him that when he left, he would not go entirely unprovided. At last, the sixth day came to an end. Bartleby, the time has come. You must leave. I'm sorry for you. Here's your money. But you must go.
I would prefer not to.
But you must! Bartleby, I owe you $12 on account. Here are 32. The odd 20 are yours. Will you take them? Very well. I will leave them here on the table. I really can't wait any longer. After you've removed your things from the office, Bartleby, you must lock up after you and leave the key under the mat. I shan't see you again, so goodbye to you. If I can be of any service to you, after you've found a new home, please do let me know. Goodbye, Bartleby, and good luck. As I walked home, I couldn't help congratulating myself. Getting rid of him like that, quietly, without any vulgar bullying, no bravado of any sort, no hectoring. I had to admit that my handling of the matter had been masterly. Without loudly bidding Bartleby to depart, as somebody else might have done, I had assumed the ground that depart he must. It was only the following day that I began to have any doubts of my full success. Bartleby, I'm seriously displeased. I'm pained, Bartleby. I thought better of you. I'd imagined you such a gentleman that in any delicate dilemma a slight hint would suffice. In short, an assumption. But it appears I'm deceived. Why, you've not even touched the money I left for you. Now look here, Bartleby. Will you or will you not leave?
I would prefer not to leave.
Some weeks passed, during which I gradually became persuaded that these troubles of mine had been predestinated from eternity. I began to feel that Bartleby was billeted upon me for some mysterious purpose of an all-wise providence, which it was not for a mere mortal like me to fathom. I determined to persecute him no more. He was harmless and noiseless as the furniture, standing there behind his screen, looking out of the window at the blank brick wall. I never felt so private as when I knew he was there. Unfortunately, I could never persuade others to think of Bartleby in just the same way.
With submission, sir, I think you're being imposed upon.
But why, Turkey? Why?
With submission, sir, I think something ought to be done about him.
About Bartleby, you mean? Well, but what can be done about him?
With submission, sir, couldn't we call a police officer?
What, Turkey? What did you say? A police officer? On what grounds could we have him removed?
With submission, sir, vagrancy.
What? Bartleby, a vagrant? A wanderer when he refuses to budge? It's precisely because he isn't a vagrant that he's still with us.
Then may I suggest no visible means of support?
No, Turkey. He does support himself. I don't know how, I'm sure, but he certainly does. And no man can produce a better proof of his power to support himself than by doing so. No. That won't do.
With submission, sir. He's getting us talked about. I've had it from Mr. Winterbottom's clerk. He called here when we were out to lunch, all except Bartleby. So up goes the clerk to ask him when you were expected back, sir. But he says not a single word. He stands there silent in the middle of the room.
Like the last column of some ruined temple. Yes. The man must certainly have been put out.
I know who'd be put out, if I had my way. I said I know who'd be put out.
Yes. Nippers, please mind your own business.
With submission, sir, you know, something ought to be done.
Much as it went against my better nature,
I was forced at last to admit that Turkey was right. On all sides among my professional acquaintances, I heard strange rumors running around, touching upon the mysterious figure that I kept in my office. Indeed, I began to wonder, apprehensively, whether he might not in the end perhaps outlive me and claim possession of my chambers by right of perpetual occupancy. Clearly, there was only one thing to be done. Bartleby, some time ago, I made a suggestion to you. I suggested the idea of your departure. You may remember, Bartleby, in a calm and serious way, I commended the idea to your careful and mature consideration. It is now some time ago. Have you come to any decision?
Yes.
May I inquire what that decision is?
I would prefer to stay.
Very well, Bartleby. You have left me no alternative. Since you will not leave me, I shall have to leave you. I have recently found these chambers too far from the city hall. The air is unwholesome. In a word, I propose to remove my offices next week. I shall no longer require your services at my new premises. I'm telling you now so that you can look for another place. Yes, that's how it was done. On the appointed day, I engaged carts and men, proceeded to my chambers, and having but little furniture, everything was removed in a few hours. Everything but Bartleby. To the end, he remained standing silently behind his screen. And when that in turn was removed, we left him standing motionless, alone in an otherwise empty office. Goodbye, Bartleby. I'm going now. Goodbye, and God bless you. Oh, and take that, will you? Oh, dear. Well, goodbye, Bartleby. Safely set up in my new quarters, I must admit that for the first few days I kept the door locked and started at every footfall in the passage. When I returned to my rooms after a little absence, I would pause at the threshold for an instant and attentively listen before I used my key. But the fears were needless. Bartleby never came nigh me. Even so, it wasn't very long before I heard news of him.
With submission, sir, there's a man here from our old offices.
Not Bartleby.
No, sir. The lawyer who took our offices over from us.
Oh, dear.
He says you are responsible for Bartleby and that you left him there. And that he refuses to do any copying or anything at all, as he prefers not to. And that he refuses to quit the premises.
Exactly, sir. He absolutely refuses to quit the premises.
I'm very sorry, sir, but really, the man you allude to is nothing to me. He's no relation or apprentice of mine.
Very well. I shall settle him then. Good morning, sir.
Several days passed and I heard nothing more. By that time, I really began to believe that all was over with Bartleby. But at the end of the second week, I was disillusioned.
With submission, sir, they say that since he was turned out of our old offices, Bartleby has taken to sitting upon the banisters and sleeping in the entry. They say that everyone is concerned, sir, that clients are leaving the offices and fears are entertained of a mob.
Oh.
With submission, sir, they say that you must really do something without delay.
Obviously, something had to be done. So I determined to go and reason with him. Going back to my old haunt, there was Bartleby on the landing outside my one-time door. Now, Bartleby, what are you doing here?
Sitting on the banister.
Bartleby, are you aware that you're a very great worry to me? One of two things must take place. Either you must do something, or something must be done to you. Now, what sort of a business would you like to engage in? Would you like to do some copying for someone? Someone else?
I would prefer not to make any change.
Would you like a clerkship in a dry goods store?
Well, there's too much confinement about that. No, I wouldn't like a clerkship. But I'm not particular.
Too much confinement? But you keep yourself confined all the time.
I would prefer not to take a clerkship.
Then, how would a nice bartender's business suit you?
Oh, I wouldn't like that at all.
No?
Though, as I said before, I'm not particular.
No. Well, then, would you like to travel through the country collecting bills for the merchants? That would improve your health?
No, I would prefer to be doing something else.
Then how about going as a companion with some young gentleman, say, to Europe?
No, I'm not particular. But I like to be stationary.
Then, hang it, stationary you shall be. If you haven't removed yourself from these premises before tonight, I shall be bound
to remove the premises.
There was no help for it. I had myself to leave town. And for the next few days, I drove about the upper part of Manhattan in my Rockaway, crossed over to Jersey City and Hoboken, and paid fugitive visits to Manhattanville and Astoria. In fact, I had almost lived in my Rockaway for a time. So fearful was I of being hunted out by an enraged Wall Street landlord that I only paid fleeting visits to my desk. But it was on one of these that I heard the news.
With submission, sir, Bartleby is no more. He was arrested and taken to the tombs, the halls of justice, I should say. They say that he offered no resistance, but that under arrest he refused all food and was found dead 2 days ago in the prison yard.
Dead? Bartleby dead? Oh, no. Oh, poor Bartleby.
His identity, sir, has now been established by the proper authorities.
It has?
With submission, sir. They say that Bartleby was a subordinate clerk in the dead letter office at Washington. He lost the post by a change in the administration.
Dead letters. Does it not sound like dead men? Conceive a man by nature in misfortune, prone to a pallid hopelessness. Can any business seem more fitted to heighten it than that of continually handling dead letters and assorting them for the flames? For by the cartload they are annually burned. Hope for those who died still hoping. Good tidings for those who died stifled by unrelieved calamities. On errands of life, those letters speed to death. And by an odd coincidence, it was a letter which gave me the clue to Bartleby's secret. Perhaps it was only fitting that the letter should be a lawyer's letter.
With submission, sir, this letter came today for the late Mr. Bartleby. It was forwarded on from a former address, and I took the liberty of opening it. Shall I read it to you, sir?
Please do, Turkey.
The letter, sir, reads as follows. Dear sir, adverting to your esteem to the 14th ult and inquiries into the whereabouts of your missing child, have established the fact that she is unhappily deceased. After the death of her mother, she was placed in the care of the local authorities as a minor without known relatives or visible means of support. It was in the care of said local authorities that the child entered upon a sad decline, which was attributed by the attendant physician to loneliness and a broken heart. It is with deep regret...
Stop, Turkey. Stop. Poor child. And poor Bartleby. So the man without an identity has assumed an identity at last. The identity which came to him too late. What his tragedy may have been, well, it is not for us to inquire. Poor Bartleby. Poor humanity.
What shall I do with the letter, sir?
Bury it, Turkey, where Bartleby himself would wish it to be buried. Return it marked person unknown to the dead letter office. This is Laurence Olivier again. I would like to express my thanks to our cast, which has included this week Lionel Merton, who played the part of Bartleby, MacDonald Park, who played the part of Turkey, and also Charles Irwin and Lois McLean. And so, until next week, when I hope once again to have the pleasure of your company, au revoir, and thank you.
Sir Laurence Olivier starred in today's transcribed program. The script was by Derek Patmore. The music was under the direction of Sidney Torp. Theatre Royal is an NBC presentation, produced and directed by Harry Allen Towers.
Kellogg's Pep! Kellogg's Pep, the build-up wheat cereal with the prize in every package, invites you to share another thrilling adventure with Mark Trail.
Battling the raging elements, fighting the savage wilderness, striking at the enemies of man and nature, one man's name resounds from snow-capped mountains down across the sun-baked plains. Mark Trail!
Not many miles north of Lost Forest is the Big Lee River, a fast-running, treacherous river full of jutting boulders, rapids, and whirlpools. A mile east of the Big Lee are Twin Lakes, as silent as the Big Lee is noisy, as calm as the Big Lee is furious. White Eagle Lake and its twin, Old Willow. Early that morning, two men paddled down the river, hiked to the first lake. Now, sometime later, they stand on a rise in the ground, not far from the shoreline. At their feet, a plunger box, ready to set off a blast of dynamite.
Okay, Les?
Sure, Kip. I'm ready when you are.
Those copper wires screwed down tight?
You talk like I don't know my stuff when it comes to blowing up a lake.
I don't want anything to go wrong. I want to make certain there's not a live fish left in that lake.
As soon as the water settles after the blast, they'll be floating all over the place, thousands of them dead from shock.
That ought to discourage Charlie Starr, huh?
It'd discourage me if I'd spent the years Charlie has working on that fish experiment.
Okay, then, let's push down the plunger. Blow White Eagle Lake sky high.
Here she goes.
And so we begin another exciting adventure with Mark Trail.
And say, if you'd like to hit the adventure trail yourself, help build up strength, help build up energy, help build up strong bones and steady nerves with that famous build-up wheat cereal, Kellogg's Pep. Whole wheat in its most delicious form, toasted flakes. That's Kellogg's Pep. Now, don't expect just one bowl of Pep to make you a tower of strength. Not even Pep can work wonders overnight. But Pep, with milk and sugar, day after day, can provide a powerhouse of food elements to help you build up strength, energy, strong bones, and steady nerves. So you'll feel fit for fun when you want to hit the adventure trail. And mark this. Marvelous malty-flavored Pep has more vitamins than any other ready-to-eat wheat cereal. Plus a swell prize that I'll tell you all about before the show's over. That's why we say that P-E-P also means prize in every package. Remember that. And this, too. If you want to feel fit for fun when you hit the adventure trail, ask your mother when she goes shopping to bring you a package of Kellogg's Pep. That's Kellogg's Pep!
It is evening in Lost Forest, the animal sanctuary run by Cherry's father, Professor Davis. Normally, there is a bustle of life in the lodge at this time of the day, but now the lodge is almost completely silent. Mark Trail, dressed in a plaid shirt and corduroy trousers, sits before the fire, reading a letter to his young friend Scotty, who still wears his dungarees. No one else is present, and there's a good reason. Professor Davis has gone to Washington to attend a conservation meeting, and Cherry went along with him.
That letter sounds like Cherry and her dad are having a whale of a good time.
What else does Professor Davis say?
He wants us to hike over and see Charlie Starr up at his Twin Lakes.
At his fish hatchery?
Uh-huh.
Wonder why Charlie didn't go to Washington.
Oh, you know you can't get him away from those lakes of his. Except to eat, and half the time he forgets that.
Yeah, you're right.
Listen, I do wish you and Scotty would hike up to see Charlie and then write in the airmail how his work is going. The matter of his request for another government allowance is coming up for discussion in a few days.
Gee, you mean the government gives him money to work on his experiment?
Of course. Now, how about it? You feel like a hike?
Sure, Mark. It'll be fun seeing Charlie again.
Okay, we'll take the trail up by Big Lee, take a look at White Eagle Lake, cut over to Old Willow Lake, then circle around to Charlie's hatchery.
Swell. Let's start first thing in the morning. Does all this timberland belong to Charlie, Mark?
Uh-huh. Nearly 5,000 acres.
Golly. Hey, look, that must be White Eagle Lake through those trees there.
That's it, Scotty.
Mark, what's Charlie trying to prove by his experiment?
Well, he's developing a breeding method for game fish, Scotty. A scientific way to grow pike and muskellunge almost twice as big as they usually do in the rivers around here.
Boy, that'll make a lot of fishermen happy.
Right. Be a boon to the government fish hatcheries, too. Hey, Scotty.
What?
Look at the water.
Golly, it's covered with dead fish.
Hundreds of them. Floating belly up.
They're lying up here on the shore, too. Mark, what happened?
I don't know. But somebody's done a pretty good job of ruining Charlie's experiment in this lake.
But why?
That's what we're going to find out. Come on. We've got a report to make to Charlie.
Mark, there's Old Willow Lake just ahead.
Too bad we don't have a boat.
Is Charlie's hatchery on the other side of the lake?
Yep, about 3 miles.
Mark, there's a boat.
At where?
One of those rubber boats pulled up on the shore. See, under those trees.
Well, come on.
Maybe it's Charlie's.
Could be, Scotty.
Gee, I wouldn't mind sitting in that boat and rowing across. This knapsack's beginning to bite into my shoulders.
My knapsack isn't exactly tickling me either. Hey, Scotty, look. Coming along the shore there.
Well, that's not Charlie.
Hello there. Say, if you're going across, we'd appreciate a lift.
Who are you?
My name's Trail, Mark Trail. This is my friend, Scotty.
What are you doing here? This is posted land.
Well, sure it is, but I might ask you the same thing.
The answer to that is mind your own business. Go on, get out of here.
Mark.
Well, now, if you've got authority from Charlie Starr to order people off his property...
You heard me the first time. Get moving.
I'll move when I please, mister, and not before.
You move now or else...
Mark, he's got a gun.
So that's the way you operate. Drop it, stranger. All right, now you do the explaining.
I'm not explaining anything except this. You watch your step, Mark Trail.
What?
You'll pay for this. Wait and see.
Mark, look, he left his boat.
Yes, Scotty. And look what's inside.
Dynamite.
A dozen sticks of it.
Golly, you don't suppose...
Now we know what happened to those fish in White Eagle Lake. They died of shock from dynamite blasts.
Then he was going to blow up this lake, too.
Not now he won't. Not with this dynamite. We'll get rid of it, Scotty. I have a feeling we'll be meeting up with that stranger again mighty soon.
What's the matter, Charlie? Don't you want to do business with me?
Why, it's not that, Kip. After all, we were partners for years, but now my work, this experiment of mine, is all I have.
But with the bad luck you're having, all those fish in White Eagle Lake dead, and now your work in Old Willow Lake ruined?
I just can't believe it. Why would anybody want to do that to me?
That's what I mean, Charlie. It's happened twice now. It'll happen again. You don't think the government's going to keep on giving you money, do you, after this?
I don't know. I don't know how I'll explain it to the government either.
You won't have to if you let me buy this acreage. I've wanted it for a long time, you know that.
Yes, Kip, yes, I know it. But I can't, not now. I've got to go on. I can't give up now.
Charlie?
Who's that?
Why, Mark Trail. Glad to see you.
Hello, Charlie. You remember Scotty?
Sure I do.
Hello, Charlie.
This is Kip Withers, Mark, my former partner.
So this is Mark Trail. Glad to meet you.
Hello.
Hiya, Scotty.
Glad to meet you, Mr. Withers.
What's the matter, Charlie? You look worried.
Well, I am, Mark, and good reason to be.
Charlie's been having tough luck. Somebody set off dynamite in White Eagle Lake a few days ago. Killed most of those fish Charlie was experimenting with.
Terrible thing, Mark.
Now I have to come along and bring him more bad news about Old Willow Lake a few miles west of here.
Somebody's done the same thing there, Mark. I can't understand it. My whole experiment ruined. I'll have to start all over again.
But Charlie, Mark, and I...
That's too bad, Charlie. You put years into this work.
Sure he has. That's what I was telling him. I'd just give up myself. Well, I guess I'll be running along, Charlie. Sorry about Old Willow.
Well, thanks, Kip. And thanks for coming by and telling me.
Glad to have met you, Trail. So long, Scotty.
So long, Mr. Withers.
We'll be seeing you.
Yeah, I'll be seeing you.
Well, Charlie, sorry to hear about White Eagle Lake, but Mr. Withers is mistaken about Old Willow.
Huh? Mistaken?
Sure, Charlie. Mark and I were there a little while ago.
Fact is, we met a fellow with a boatload of dynamite. He brought it along. It's out there on the porch behind those flower pots.
Why, Mark, who was it?
Don't know, Charlie. Never saw him before.
He went scooting off, scared to death.
But why?
Why would anybody want to kill all the fish in my lakes? I'm at my wit's end. Mark, I know you'd do anything to protect our wildlife.
Well, Charlie, the more conservation-minded we Americans become, the longer we'll keep our country rich in natural resources.
I know. And that's my aim, too.
Now, you've got to help me, Mark. You've got to find that fella, whoever he is.
I will, Charlie, but I'll need help. Now, what about your former partner, Kip Withers? Does he live around here?
Yes, up near Big Lee River at the north end of my land. He's got a cabin up there.
Good. I think Scotty and I will go calling on Mr. Withers right now.
Come in, Trail. Glad to see you.
Thanks, Withers.
Golly, this cabin sure looks nice, Mr. Withers.
Very comfortable inside, but outside is the Big Lee, the most murderous stream in the state.
Mark says it's too treacherous even to cross.
That's right. Well, I guess you two must have come close on my heels from Charlie.
Yeah, we did. I'd like to talk to you about the bad luck Charlie's been having.
Yes, too bad. Somebody sure got it in for him.
Kip!
Looks like he's got more company, Mr. Withers.
Come in, Les.
Kip, something went wrong.
Mark, it's that fellow we saw on the lake.
What are they doing here?
Don't get excited, Les.
But that's Mark Trail.
Maybe you'd like to introduce us to your friend, Mr. Withers. We didn't have that pleasure before.
Why, sure. This is Les Barrett.
Seems Barrett's pretty good at blowing up lakes. Especially those that belong to Charlie.
That's right, Trail.
That's what I came to tell you, Kip. I didn't.
You what?
I didn't get the chance.
You stupid fool.
This guy Trail came along and stole the boat with the dynamite in it.
I had a hunch you two were working together, Withers.
Don't see how you could have figured that out.
You told Charlie about a second explosion you thought had taken a place. Kind of puzzled me. That's why I come over here to talk to you.
Well, you know it all now, Trail. I'm no fool like Charlie. That's why I quit being his partner years ago. Those experiments he's conducting can make him a fortune. Unless he gives it to the government free.
Charlie's interested in doing something for the wildlife of this country, Withers.
And I'm interested in doing something for me. I'm going to get those experiments away from Charlie and cash in.
Some of us might stop you.
Not now, you won't. Stand back and reach, you and the kid.
I guess you walked into a pack of trouble, Trail.
Looking for evidence.
That's right, and there it is. Plunger box, roll a copper wire, and just about everything else you'll need to blow up a lake.
Yes, but I don't think you'll be using that evidence, Trail.
No?
Not where you're going. Let's tie him up. Use that packing rope. Put your arms down, Trail, behind you. The kid, too. Go ahead, Les.
What's your idea, Kip?
They're going to take a ride in a canoe down the Big Lee. And I don't think they'll be coming back. Take out those paddles, Les. The two of you. Get in that canoe.
Mark will be drowned.
Easy says, Scotty. Get in.
Smart guy, Trail. Hey, Les?
He'll be smarter if he gets out of this.
If he does. Trail, you know what's going to happen to you and the kid, don't you? You know that river, how murderous it is?
He knows well enough.
Look at those rapids. Round the bend down there are more of them. Five times as treacherous. That canoe will be crushed to splinters, and you with it. Shove him off, Les.
Bon voyage.
Goodbye, Mark Trail. This is the last I'll be seeing of you.
In a light canoe, their hands tied tightly behind them, Mark and Scotty move closer and closer to the murderous rapids of Big Lee. In a moment, we'll continue our story, so stand by. Murderous rapids of a river from which no man returns.
Will Mark and Scotty be able to stand the strain? And how about you? In the last few minutes of your next basketball game, suppose you have the ball near the enemy basket. You crouch, take aim, and shoot. Ooh, almost tied the score. But suppose you made Kellogg's Pep a main part of your breakfast every single day. Pep, the build-up wheat cereal. Wheat in its most delicious form. Toasted flakes. Ready to eat. Fun to eat. Wonderful with milk and sugar. Hey, you jump and grab the ball from the backboard. Shoot. Tie score! Time to call on some of the strength, energy, strong bones, and steady nerves that Pep's powerhouse of food elements has been helping you build up so you'll feel fit for fun. Wait. The ref calls a foul against your opponent. With only seconds to go, you step to the foul line for one free throw. 38-37, you win! It really pays to enjoy a daily dish of Pep. Pays to feel fit for fun. Yes, sir. And don't forget that PEP also stands for prize in every package. A dandy prize I'll tell you all about before the show's over. Meantime, remember, you can have your fun and eat it, too, with Kellogg's Pep.
Kip Withers and Les Barrett have dynamited White Eagle Lake, one of the lakes in which Charlie Starr is carrying out his government-sponsored fish breeding experiments. To get evidence of this, Mark Trail and Scotty went to Kip's cabin on the Big Lee, a river of murderous rapids. There, at gunpoint, Kip and Les forced Mark and Scotty into a canoe and shoved it off into the river down toward the rapids from which no man returns.
Lie down as flat as you can, Scotty.
I can't hold on, Mark, with my hands tied.
Press your knees against the sides. Brace yourself with your legs.
But this canoe can't ride these rapids.
Hold on, Scotty. Rocks ahead. We get past them.
Golly, Mark, we made it.
Don't get up, Scotty. Stay down. Gotta keep her bow first. Otherwise, she'll go over. Then we will be goners.
Swinging around the bend down there, Kip.
That canoe won't stay afloat long in that water.
Yeah, but suppose it does. Suppose they...
They won't. They're headed straight for Impassable Canyon. Beyond that, there's no turning back. Come on. We're headed for Charlie's. We've got a job to finish.
You mean Charlie?
Yeah, unless he comes round, I mean Charlie.
Look back, Scotty. Can you see the cabin?
Not now, Mark. We're around the bend.
Good. We've made it this far, Scotty. We'll make it the rest of the way, too.
But how, Mark?
The river widens just ahead. It's pretty still. Now, I want you to do as I say. Sit up, then turn around and lean against me.
But what for, Mark?
I've got a box of waterproof matches in my jacket pocket. Fish them out.
You mean burn the rope in two?
Right. You'll be working behind your back with the matches, but all you have to do is strike them. I can see over my shoulder just enough to do the trick.
But you'll burn yourself.
Not if I'm careful. Hurry, Scotty. We haven't much time. Not far down there is Impassable Canyon. Strike another one, Scotty.
All right.
The water's getting rough again. We don't make it by the time we reach those rapids.
There's a bridge way down there, Mark.
I know, Scotty. Hurry.
The match is lit, Mark.
Hold as still as you can.
Yeah.
Rope around my hands. It's already smoldering. If I can get it weak enough...
Mark, your rope's coming loose.
Yep. I think I can break these ropes now. There.
Golly, Mark, you're the bravest guy I know. That match was burning you when you...
Oh, never mind about that now, Scotty. Let me untie you. There. There you are. That feel better?
Oh, boy, I'll say.
All right now, Scotty. Listen carefully. There's not a second to lose. We're nearly to that bridge. We're going fast.
I'm listening.
Now, I've got these ropes tied together. Yours and mine. I'm lashing one end to the stern here. There you are. And the other end, I'm tying around one of my ankles. Now, there's a strong girder underneath that bridge. An underpinning brace. You see it?
Oh, I see it.
If I can make it to that girder...
You're going to jump for it?
It's the only way to stop this canoe. Now, listen. As soon as I jump, hold on for your life. I'm going to stand up, Scotty. Steadier.
Be careful, Mark.
If I make it, I'll be dangling in midair. And this rope around my ankle will snap taut. And the stern of the canoe will go up several feet out of water. You understand?
Yes, but here comes the bridge.
Hold tight, Scotty.
Up I go! You made it, Mark!
All right, Scotty?
Sure, except the bow of this canoe is nearly underwater.
Now, if it tips over, hang on. Going hand over hand along this girder to the bank and pull you and the canoe with me to dry land. Are you all right, Scotty?
Sure, Mark. A little wet. Boy, was I holding my breath when you dropped from that girder,
Scotty,
to the shore here.
I want you to go to Charlie's hatchery as fast as you can. And stay there.
All right, Mark.
I'll join you a little later. Right now, I've got some investigating to do alone.
Kip, I don't understand you. I've told you before, and I tell you again. I don't want to sell my land to you or anybody.
You sure about that, Charlie?
Well, of course I'm sure. I'm not going to give up. Why are you so interested in having me give up my experiment anyway?
Why, I'm only thinking of you, Charlie.
I'm not so sure of that. I'm not so sure of you either, Kip.
What do you mean, Charlie?
I mean, you said there'd been a second explosion. You said a minute ago you came here alone. And yet I saw you on the road down there with another man.
Why, Charlie, you're not calling me a liar.
I am. And I'm going to ask you something else. Where is Mark Trail and Scotty? They went to see you. What have you done to them?
Charlie! Charlie!
Who's that?
Scotty! Scotty!
Charlie, Mark told me... Charlie, that's one of the men who's trying to ruin your experiment.
Shut up!
They tied us up, Charlie, and shoved us off in a canoe on Big Lee.
Chip, you double-crossing...
Get away from me!
Charlie!
Let him alone. Reach, both of you, and sit down on those chairs. Go on.
You'll pay for this, Kip.
Yeah, I don't think I will. Because dead men don't talk, and that includes Trail.
What are you going
to
do?
I'm going to tie you up to those chairs. I'm going to take your notebooks, Charlie. That'll tell me all I need to know about your experiments. And then I'm going to dynamite this hatchery with both of you in it. Les, come here.
Kip, what happened? I thought I saw that kid Scotty running there.
Trail's alive. He'll be here any minute.
I found the dynamite he stole from me. It was here on the porch.
Good, we can use that.
What are you planning to do?
Charlie and the kid are tied up. You go back to my cabin. Get that wire and the plunger box. I'll wait here for Trail.
Can you handle him alone?
I've got a gun, haven't I? You bring the things here. As soon as Trail shows up, we're going to finish this job once and for all.
You're crazy, Kip. You think you can get away with this?
When Mark Trail gets here...
I'm ready and waiting for him. When he opens that door, he'll find me behind it with this barrel pointing straight at him.
Maybe he's smarter than you think he is.
And maybe not. You don't have to worry, Charlie. Your work won't be wasted. It's all right here in these notebooks.
Those notebooks belong to the United States government.
Not anymore, they don't. Now, that's Trail right now. Didn't expect him that quick.
Mark, don't come in here!
Get back, Trail, and reach.
No, you don't, even if I have to tip over the chair with me in it.
Hey!
Drop that gun, Kip.
Get back against the wall there.
Nice going, Scotty.
I was fast thinking, Scotty. Tipping yourself and that chair over in front of him. Here, I'll help you up.
It's the only thing I could think of
to do. I'm not through yet, Trail. Look behind you.
Drop that gun, Trail. Put up your hands. Get over there with the two of them.
Get the stuff, Les?
Yeah, it's outside.
Give me a knife.
What for?
I cut him loose. I don't want the sheriff to find a couple of tied up corpses in the wreckage. Hold that gun on him.
If one of your moves, I'll shoot.
I'll set the charge while you hold him here. When I'm ready, I'll holler out to you. You lock the door and come running.
I get it. Then up she goes to Kingdom Come. And these three with it.
You ready, Kip?
In just a minute.
He's taking a long time, Les.
Making sure nothing goes wrong.
Maybe you're right. Maybe that's exactly what he's doing.
What do you mean?
I mean, Kip's crazy like a fox.
He's going to leave you in here with us.
Sure he is.
Me and Kip's partners in this.
What's that got to do with it? Why don't you try the door?
Why?
Because it's locked, that's why. Kip locked it behind him when he went out.
You're crazy. It is locked.
He's going to kill you, too.
Oh, no, he's not. Kip, what's taking so long?
Don't worry about it, Les.
Look out the window. He's behind that boulder out there.
Unlock this door. Let me out of here.
Got through, Les. You're going to die with him.
You double cross.
You shot wild, Les. But this dynamite's got perfect aim. Here goes the plunger. Down.
Kip Withers pushes down the handle of the dynamite plunger box to blow the hatchery house to smithereens. In a moment, we'll find out what happens next. So keep listening.
Well, here they are. All the details on that prize you'll find in every box of Kellogg's Pep. It's a bright-colored plastic statuette, and there are 18 different kinds. Cowboys, Indians, football, baseball, and basketball players. Even animals. Say, why don't you collect them? Trade them. Try and get all 18. They're fun. Each statuette has its own pedestal, so you can move them around in games. Give them a ride in toy trains and boats. Stand them in toy villages. And you don't have to spend a penny extra, mail a box top, or wait a single day. Just open your box of Kellogg's Pep, and there, right inside its own cellophane envelope, will be your brightly colored statuette. Fun to find? You bet. But even more fun to play with. And you'll have still more fun eating every crisp, toasted flake of marvelous, multi-flavored Pep. So when Mother goes to market, tell her to pick the package with P.E.P. on the front. P.E.P. for prize in every package. P.E.P. for Pep, the build-up wheat cereal. That's Kellogg's Pep.
Inside Charlie Starr's hatchery house, a group of men wait for the deafening explosion which will blow them all to kingdom come. All are tense to the point of bursting except Mark Trail, who calmly watches Kip Withers through the open window as he pushes down the handle of the dynamite plunger box. And then...
Mark, it didn't go off.
What happened?
Well, lucky something went wrong.
Look, Kip's making a break for it. He jumped out from behind the boulder and he's running away.
I'm gonna kill that rat.
No, don't shoot.
How's that for range?
You got him.
He's down.
Now, I'll take that gun, Les. Kip's through and so are you now.
Okay. I know when I'm licked.
Mark, what happened? Why didn't the dynamite go off?
After I left you at Big Lee, I went back to Kip's cabin and disconnected the wiring inside the plunger box.
Thank goodness you did.
I wanted to make sure they wouldn't make another try at blowing up old Willow Lake.
Thanks to you, Mark, my work isn't ruined.
All right, get moving, Les. I'm taking you to the sheriff, along with Kip.
What did that letter from Cherry say, Mark? They coming back home soon?
In a few days, Scotty. He says Charlie was given another allowance to carry on with his experiments.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yes, and it'd be wonderful, too, if we could send all the criminals who destroy our natural resources for personal gain to jail along with Kip and Les.
Yes. I wish we had more men like Charlie, Mark. Men who experiment in the interest of conservation for the good of us all.
Mark, you seem in an awful hurry to get back to Lost Forest. Any trouble there?
Yes, Charlie. Lots of trouble.
Well, that's too bad. What's up?
Well, Scotty and I have been cooking our own meals while Cherry and her dad are away. And we've got a weekend full of trouble. Washing all the dirty dishes.
Mark is only kidding about that kind of trouble. Little does he know that real trouble awaits him when he returns to Lost Forest. The kind of trouble that ends in death. Tune in same time, same station on Monday, and find out what happens to Mark Trail.
Battling the raging elements, fighting the savage wilderness, striking at the enemies of man and nature, one man's name resounds from snow-capped mountains down across the sun-baked plains, Mark Trail.
Remember to tune in then next Monday when Mark Trail will again be brought to you by the build-up wheat cereal, Kellogg's Pep.
This program is entirely fictitious. The resemblance of any name, personality, or incident to an actual person or event is merely coincidental. This program came from New York. Mark Trail by Ed Dodd also appears in the comics of many of America's leading newspapers. Look for it daily and Sunday. Matt Crowley plays Mark Trail, and Ben Cooper is Scotty. Today's Mark Trail was written by Jack Bearfield, directed by Drex Hines. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System. We'll be right back.
That's it for the Relic Radio show for this week, but you can find more old-time radio at relicradio.com, past episodes of this show, all the others, our Shoutcast stream, and our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Thanks to those who have donated, and thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Tuesday with another episode of the Relic Radio show.